Okay, so let's have some tea. Let's get our tea going. Do you want a
top up when you're in?
Yeah, I do want a top up because I cheated and had my tea without you, even though we agreed.
That's incredibly rude, but I'm just going to let it go.
Do you think it's a bad... it's a harbinger of doom?
It's a bad omen, especially in the billiard room.
Because we were supposed to be doing this together, but I already started without you. Thanks. I might need a wee splash of milk as well. It's nice to be using all the paraphernalia.
I enjoy the burlyware, it's very elegant.
Right? Yeah. I'm just really glad that I remembered to use the strainer. And I say that even though I didn't, you used the strainer for me because I'd forgotten.
No, so my parents did yesterday, and my stepdad was like, oh, never mind. And I was like, this isn't the shipyards, maniac. And he's just got like,
although
got things of tea on his lips and stuff. And I was like, have you seen the strainer, Will?
I think I'm just going to say also, because it's our first podcast, that you're not saying something about the Glasgow shipyards there. Because I'm sure they do use their strainers. They do use their strainers. Let's not get, like, you know, set upon by the shipyard union.
No, I'd
straight
like to just clarify
gate.
That actually my family are from a shipbuilding family of Geordies. So.
True. Right, lovely. So let's make a proper start. Let's make a start for our first podcast. So, welcome to episode one of Macintosh at the Willows podcast. My name is Jodie. I am the creative learning manager here, so I have the lovely job of bringing in school children and community groups and architects and students and kind of all sorts of stuff that's about learning and engaging with the building. I mean, obviously, we're in a pandemic, so can't have many people in at the moment, but in the future, hopefully, we'll get back to those halcyon days with little feet running up and down the stairs. And using the teapots just like we are, and getting to use the strainer, etc. The reason that we wanted to do a podcast, really, there were a couple of reasons. Obviously now, at the moment, with the lockdown, it's really hard for people to visit. And, you know, I personally am so sad that people can't come in, because one of my favourite things is giving tours and meeting people who, you know, are experiencing this building for the first time. And just either... people who have walked past it and never come in, or people who've come from quite far away, like America, and then they come and they see connections between Macintosh and, say, Frank Lloyd Wright or somewhere like that. So it's really gutting that people can't come in at the moment. And I thought that if we did a podcast, we could maybe form a wee connection so people can hear a little bit about the building, even though they can't visit, and also give everyone an opportunity, if they've got questions about the building, they can ask us and we can find out for you. So Isabella, later on in the podcast, will talk a little bit how you can get in contact with us through the website, so that if there is something you'd love to know about Macintosh or the building or Miss Cranston or tea or anything really, you know, we can have a wee investigation for you. Isabella, do you want to tell everyone about what you do here?
My name's Isabella and I'm the events and bookings coordinator here. So we use spaces like the billiard room, like the historic spaces, the billiard room, the Salon Deluxe, the gallery and the main tea rooms for big events and dinners and parties and things, well, when we're allowed. And then on the modern side of the building, we have the AV theatre and the boardroom and the exhibition, which are also great for more corporate events. Mm. And then I get to do fun things like this, as well as the socials. So,
yeah, busy. Isabel's always very busy. Busy. Now, there's a very good reason that we're having tea, apart from the fact that it's the afternoon and afternoon is tea time, generally.
There's tea class.
For people who work here. But the lovely thing about having tea on the podcast is that we can try out one of the 27 types of tea that they have down in the tea rooms. So for the first episode, I thought we might as well start big with the house tea, which is the 1903 blend. And it's made specially for this place, so you can't get it anywhere else. I checked with Chloe, who works downstairs in the tea room, and she says it's a very popular choice, actually, partly for that reason. And what do you think to it? How are you finding it?
It's got like rose, in inverted commas, decorated with rose buds. Mm. So there's sort of a nod to Macintosh and the Macintosh rose. You can actually definitely taste it. Mm. It's a firm favourite with the takeaway afternoon teas as well, isn't it?
I think it's a great tea for if you want to be a little bit adventurous, but you're not ready for the, you know, the really out there teas that we have.
It's like a cheeky breakfast.
Exactly, right?
That's your cheeky breakfast tea.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying it, actually. It's nice. And what's lovely is that we are, by having tea, in the Willow Tea Rooms building, the original Willow Tea Rooms building, we're doing something that people did here like 117 years ago, right? Because the lovely thing about this building is it's still doing the same job that Macintosh designed it to do. And that makes it really rare for a Macintosh building, especially now that art school's gone. You know, it still functions as it was supposed to do. It's not a museum, you know. We call it a living, breathing museum.
Exactly, yeah. The one thing that we probably don't... I mean, obviously we have the amenities of a modern tea rooms, but other than that, everything works pretty well. And then you've got the exemption of probably just the dugout and the smoking den.
Mm, yeah.
But the smoking den might give it a nightmare.
I feel also, you know, the Glasgow City Council will be knocking on our door, chapping on our door if we let people smoke in here.
Yeah, health and safety might not be up to it. But it would be interesting, you know, atmospheric. We could get a smoke machine.
We could get those children's cigarettes and maybe... I don't know if they recreate the smoking atmosphere.
In here for the children's cigarette.
I don't think they smoke, actually, do they?
What
I
mean, do you do it?
They just put the candy rather than the smoking.
Oh, they're even the ones that you get from, like, the joke shop. Remember those ones?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're not good for you.
No.
I'm sure they're filled with talcum powder. They're probably illegal now.
I'm not sure you should be essentially eating talcum, or certainly setting fire to talcum powder in your mouth.
Yeah. No. You can't just breathe it in, but again...
Seems... As someone in charge of children in the building, I feel like I'm...
Take it up with my mother.
I've thoughts about that. So, so it's really lovely that we're just doing... In some ways, we're just doing what people did 100-odd years ago, really. And you know, kudos to Macintosh that the building still stands and it still does pretty much what we want it to do, right? So
117 years, that's actually mental.
Yeah, and not only is it still, you know, up and running, it's beautiful. Like, I know Isabella and I are biased, but it is, like, what I think one of the... We're so fortunate that we come here and we're surrounded by this, right? And I certainly, like, if I've got quite a tough day, I can always just pop into here where we are and look at this incredible built like room and be like, this is lovely, this is so beautiful.
Yeah, we're sitting in the billiard room just now and I think it's probably my favourite room in the building.
Yeah.
Especially on the odd chat, because you come in, it's really peaceful, you can smell like the lacquer and the leather, so it's really atmospheric in that way. And you can imagine like the massive billiard table and the smoke that would come from the smoking den,
yeah.
So you've got that kind of like harkening back in time. And then all of a sudden, every now and then, you'll just hear someone rapping outside or playing like some like great metal riff.
That's true, actually.
It brings it to reality.
I'm not sure, you might be able to hear actually on the recording. We've got the ambient sound of Socky Hall Street just out the windows, because obviously the windows aren't double glazed, they're actually beautifully mullioned glass there. And behind me, if we're really lucky, we might hear the thunk of the dumbwaiter as it passes by delivering food to the Salon Deluxe, which is just underneath us, the beautiful room with the chandeliers. Isabella, you're just like talking about like how you and I experience the building in different ways. You actually have a master's in art history from Edinburgh University. So first of all, congratulations, that's a super achievement.
Lucrative.
Right? When you come in the building, when you walk around, you see it. I imagine you see it in a different way from me, really. You have, like, a different experience of it.
Kind of. So I did classical art and archaeology, so it's kind of like, it's, like, older stuff. I keep on saying old junk, and that's not the way to describe it, but... And I like the more sort of flamboyant style of older stuff, or Roman art and things like that, for the symbolism and all the rest of it, but I can appreciate symbolism in this in a completely different way. But I used to work in Sloan's, and that had, like, a really old sort of... That was actually where Miss Granson's, one of her tea rooms used to be, right next to it, so I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of amazing that this is actually your second Cranston building.
I know.
I mean, she only had four, you know, and you've already, on your bingo card, you've already got two.
That's amazing, yeah.
This is probably the most beautiful place I've ever worked in. I think I feel quite confident saying that. In comparison, for example, I worked in a cheese powder factory when I was a student.
Cheese powder?
Cheese powder. So
what
not
is that?
Cheese, but cheese powder.
What do you mean by that?
So I want you to envisage a warehouse, and it was full of tubs of out-of-date cheese powder.
Out-of-date cheese powder?
Yes, and my summer job was to verify that the cheese powder was out of date, which you could actually do with your nose, but, you know, professionally I thought I'd look at the dates stamped on them, and then roll the, you know, tubs of out-of-date cheese powder into a
skin.
Was
it in, like, barrels or tubs?
It was in Yorkshire. It was in tubs, because it was a powder.
But how do you roll a tub?
You just make sure the lid's fastened on, and then you tilt it on its side, because it's a cylinder, and then you just, haul it off. So I would say, in comparison to the cheese powder factory, this is prettier. Oops. Too many details, basically. Yeah. So, how does this compare with other places in terms of visual aesthetic? Is this the prettiest place? I feel like that's a loaded question.
I mean, that's, without a doubt. If you think about the fact that I've worked in like a lot of commercial businesses.
Yeah.
I worked in a Japanese restaurant and it had like lovely surroundings, but you can't quite compare it to the work of Mac and Josh and McDonald's. It would be a bit obscene, but we could do it anyway. Look at this beautiful lantern.
Yeah. Isabella, this is our first episode, so we're doing some introductions, but later down the line we've had quite a few ideas, haven't we, about what we might cover. So do you want to talk us through some topics that we thought maybe would be quite interesting?
This list could be subject to change, but I'm thinking that these are pretty solid ideas. So we're thinking the wonderful women of Glasgow, suffragettes, artists and businesswomen. Restoration secrets, and we're going to guest one of the crafters essentially, which would be amazing. Get someone else in but us to talk to you. How cooking has changed and stayed the same in the 117 years since we opened could be one, and we were hoping to get our head chef in as a guest to talk about it and see what he thinks of maybe older tools or older recipes.
And I've also already checked about whether he could make us some of the food that Miss Cranston served.
Have you actually?
Yes, I have, in 1903, because there are certain dishes that we have not embraced in the 21st century.
It's the fish custard.
but I think for the sake of the podcast and our listeners, that we should take one for the team. Not that I'm saying fish custard's going to be disgusting.
Listen, I'll try the fish custard one. Honestly, give it to me.
Great, okay. Yeah. Although, if you try the fish custard, that leaves me with the sheep's head soup with the eyeball.
You don't have to look at the eyeball.
I know, but as a vegetarian, that's going to be quite tricky.
That might be a problem, yeah. Okay, so you have to have the custard then.
I'll have the custard.
I can have both.
Yeah. We'll do rock, paper, scissors on the day.
Texture.
But I think that's going to be a really interesting topic, isn't it, to see about what things have stayed the same, because, you know, if it ain't broke, basically, you know, and yet there's all these modern pieces of equipment that make life so much easier in the kitchen than it was in the, you know, turn of the century. Like, for example, they've got an induction cooker downstairs.
Exactly. Do you know you can steam an egg in it?
So that sounds like a lovely episode. What else do you think we might cover?
So special episodes focusing on individual rooms. We thought you guys would want to hear about the history of certain rooms. We can describe them while we're sitting here, talk about what we can see, and a lot of you might have already visited, so that'll be fun for you all. And then we're going to do one on what is Art Nouveau? What is Art Nouveau?
Isabella will be covering that one because of her art history degree.
And then we've got one which Jodie is going to specialise in, which is the Japanese philosophy and how Charles Rennie Mackintosh embraced its ideas. The next one would be how we became a nation of tea drinkers.
Which I think is fascinating, actually. I've been doing a wee bit of reading about tea, because for a long time we just didn't embrace tea, and then we all embraced tea, and now we're still well into tea.
It's because of temperance. Everyone was like, can't drink beer, go and drink tea, go and drink something.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of me that's quite patriotic about the fact that we're tea people rather than coffee people. Even though I love coffee, there's a little, I've got a sweet spot for tea.
I feel everywhere has either tea or coffee, or maybe hot chocolate, so like a hot drink.
Yeah.
Their special hot drink.
Yeah.
Tradition. And the last one will be Mackintosh, restoration and rebuilding. And we'll probably discuss what we might replace the GSA with.
Not we, as in me and Isabella, obviously.
We're not going to hand build it. We could.
We couldn't, though. I don't think
we could.
Well, yeah, it's a while away. Maybe Wikipedia. You can learn everything if you read Wikipedia.
You have lots of Play-Doh in the learning education.
I do, yes. Yeah.
Might not.
I have some.
Well, we can get more.
Yeah. But again, that's something that where when people come to visit, they often ask us, what do we think should happen about the Glasgow School of Art? Like, should it be replaced with like a replica, or should it be something that's completely different, but maybe in the spirit of Macintosh? And what's lovely about that question is, at the moment, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. It's lovely to hear people's views about it, really.
Someone asked me if I thought it should be left as kind of a shell, as kind of like
like a burned out shell.
Yeah, it's like a relic to flames and the what's happened to it and stuff. And I feel that that might be a mistake.
I would like to see something positive there.
Exactly,
I think.
Something growing.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe a garden
filled with roses.
Yeah. Who knows? Like I say, it's food for thought, and it's something that we can chat about, and also, you know, you guys can give us your opinions as well, and we can. Lovely. So the first topic that I thought we should talk about in our first episode, is we should get to the heart of the building, really, and that's the three people who we have to thank for being here. And the building's called Macintosh at the Willow. Lots of you know it probably as the Willow Tea Rooms, the old Willow Tea Rooms. When the trust were thinking of a name for the building, because we couldn't call it the Willow Tea Room still, there was, you know, a general consensus that Macintosh should be in the name, Macintosh, because Macintosh is so tied to Glasgow. You know, he was a Glasgow boy, and I would say, you know, I totally agree with all of that. And the only downside to it is that the two other people that are equally, in my view, important to the building, don't get a mention, you know, and that is Margaret MacDonald, Macintosh's wife, and of course Miss Cranston, who owned the tea rooms. But obviously the name would be far too long if we called it Macintosh, MacDonald and Cranston.
I quite like that.
Yeah.
We'd
have to borrow some of Sainsbury's sign space though.
They don't mind, they, you know.
Yeah. Or tiny font, but again,
tiny font.
It's not what you look for in a sign, it's tiny font.
Yeah, that might sort of, the logo would be complicated.
Yeah, very complicated.
It's a different story.
Yeah. So I thought what we could talk about today is just, is that kind of triumvirate, that trio of brilliant people, and maybe how they kind of fit together as a three and as pairs as well. So Isabella, do you want to say a wee bit about, I suppose, the artistic pair, so Macintosh and Margaret MacDonald, maybe who they are and what kind of, how do we see them, how do we see their partnership in the building?
So I think that sometimes Margaret gets overlooked a bit in the, it's always Macintosh's and then Margaret's referred to as Macintosh's wife. Mm. But in reality, she probably, although we don't have actual physical documentation of it for the most part, they probably worked very closely together. Macintosh often said things like, he wrote to his friend Herman Muthius?
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Muthius, yeah.
Oh, me. To say, the quote was, "Just now we are working on two large panels for the frieze. Miss Margaret MacDonald is doing one and I'm doing the other. We are working on them together and that makes the work very pleasant." So you've got this idea of them working side by side. He would also say things like, Margaret was half, if not three quarters, of his work, and that she was the sort of the genius or the brains behind it. So I think they were very influenced by each other. I know that Margaret obviously thrived in working in a collaborative environment because she'd worked with her sister so much. You've got the example of them working as a four, the Glasgow Four. And between the four of them, they've kind of they collaboratively brought their different styles together. You've got this kind of occulty mysticism, symbolism of the sisters, mixing with the sort of more geometric lines of Macintosh. And then you get this really interesting and not so myopic work that they brought out together. But in terms of this building, the Sound Deluxe is probably the best example of how Macintosh was inspired by, or probably Margaret did do a lot of things that she perhaps wasn't given as much credit for. But obviously this is opinion as well. Because you've got the Sound Deluxe, and as soon as you walk in, again, if you've seen it, you'll understand the lines of the rest of the building, very geometric, quite straight, very Japanese influence. And they are in the Sound Deluxe, but there's something a lot more flowy and organic about it. So you walk in and there's just something about it, the lines change. And the feel of the room is completely different to anywhere else in the building as well. It's much more decorative, it's elaborate, things are, you've got sort of like dripping like the baubles and the glass and everything like that. Again, flowy is the word, perhaps not the most academic word, but it works for this. And in that room, you have even more references to water, and then you've got the willow, and you've got the moon, and these are all traditionally very feminine symbols as well, all tied to Art Nouveau through the mystic and sort of fantastical elements. And not only that, you've got Margaret's gesso, which is incredibly dominant, and also something amazing, which is the colours of the room, which are the colours, the suffragette colours. So you've got purple, pink, green and white. Which I doubt was a mistake. So that would probably be their collaborative effort in this building. But I think they thrived together.
Yeah, they did. And also, you know, looking at their biographies as well, like they had a long marriage. It was a successful marriage. They stuck together through thick and thin.
She got out of jail once.
I didn't know that.
Did you hear about that?
Is this when he was accused of being a spy?
Yeah.
We'll do a whole episode, don't worry. We'll do a whole episode.
Just get it out there, at the click.
Yeah. And also, you know, he was a Glaswegian at the time who liked his drink. And apparently she kept him on the straight and narrow as much as was possible, I think.
Yeah.
Whenever I do a tour and it comes up about, you know, who did what, I often say that I don't think we gain anything from trying to pick apart their legacy because they worked together for so long and they influenced each other. Firstly, as you said, it's kind of impossible to say, oh, Margaret did this, you know, above and beyond stuff like the gesso. And also I think art very often is the flourishing of influences that we have around us, aren't they? You know, we're not islands specifically, so. Mm-hmm. So I always think we look at the building as the result of two people working together to create this masterpiece, really. So the other, I suppose, partnership in that three is McIntosh and Miss Cranston. So Miss Cranston, you know, we think that, or always press that, without Miss Cranston, we wouldn't have the McIntosh that we have. Because when Miss Cranston hired him, he was 28, and that's a baby for an architect, really, 28.
God, same age as me.
Right, same age as you.
I just thought achieving more.
Yeah, achieve more. After this podcast, go and achieve more.
Yeah.
And Miss Cranston, you know, not only did she hire him, but she said, you can do what you like. You know, you can do the front, you can do the back, you can do the insides, you can do the fixtures and fittings, the uniforms, the cutlery. Like, he was given kind of carte blanche to do as he wished. Again, that never happens to an architect anyway. It was so rare, because usually, like nowadays, we split those jobs up, don't we? So you'd hire an interior designer, and you'd hire an architect, and you'd hire someone to deal with things like lights and, you know, carpets and things like that. So it must have been a dream commission. And it's I don't know, I'm always fascinated to think about their psychologies, really. Because on the surface, they seem like very different people. Like, he was very young, 28. She was much older by then, established. And for those of you who've ever seen a picture of Miss Cranston, you know, she's quite well known to be, you know, she's got this very famous picture where she's in a massive Victorian dress, and it's a very old-fashioned dress at the time, isn't it? It's like from the 1860s, you know, and she was wearing that in, like, 1903. So she was deeply traditional.
Yeah, the way that she dressed was complete juxtaposition to her actual values.
Yeah.
In a really strange way, but like really visually just like old-fashioned compared to what her personality was like and her morals. So she was very forward-thinking.
Yeah. So you certainly, I think if you saw her and you didn't know her, you would never think that she was the person who took this massive risk on this young architect.
Maybe she lost her bet. Maybe we're just assuming that she was just like, yes, Charles, your class, I've seen you work before.
Yeah.
Maybe it was something else, and then she was like, wow, this was actually a really great idea.
You're really bursting a bubble here, Isabel. I hear you, but I'm not sure that's the case, because I feel like, you know, as Miss Cranston was a member of the temperance movement, she was, you know, very well known to be very respectable, it's unlikely that you would have found her in the gambling dens of Glasgow. True, maybe this was her one vice. When the building opened, people were talking about it, and like magazines came from Europe to take photographs, and nowadays obviously we recognise it as a masterpiece, and that's down to Miss Cranston giving him that job at that time in his life. So she, I mean, as I said, like on the surface, you'd think that they had very little in common. But I do wonder about the fact that Miss Cranston, being a successful businesswoman at the turn of the century, and having this quite unique personality, she obviously was a little bit of an outsider, even though she was accepted by the establishment, you know.
Just a woman in 1903 with a business.
Exactly. So I think having that status as being slightly out with the norm, I wonder if she saw something in McIntosh, who was also, you know, not interested in the traditional architecture styles or anything, you know. He was a risk taker, and she was a risk taker in terms of business, you know, being a woman running a successful business must have been a huge risk. And in the same way, I think McIntosh deciding, well, I'm going to build what is essentially a Japanese tea room right in the middle of Scotland. Yeah, and when the tea rooms opened, they were really successful, right? They were busy.
It was like a wonderland.
Yeah, and people were talking about them. You know, they must have had some kind of kindred spirit to work so well together and to produce this.
I would have thought that she saw that kind of exciting, new, inventive thing about him and thought, you know, that's exactly what's going to pull the customers in because that's what they were looking for.
Yeah.
Something different, something exciting that doesn't involve alcohol as well.
Yeah.
Something for everyone.
Yeah. We, obviously we'll touch more on Miss Cranston, I think, and Margaret MacDonald as we go through our podcast. But Isabella, do you want to say a little bit about, like, if people have questions that they'd like us to have a look at for them, or obviously if anyone has memories of the tea room, we love to hear about when people come in sometimes we have people come in and they say, oh, my grandma worked here, you know, a long time ago, or I remember coming here when I was a little kid. We love to collect those memories, and we're looking for ways to like make it a little bit more official about creating a sort of an oral history bank of resources.
Yeah, definitely. We'd like to have a catalogue of these and make sure that they're kept and preserved and shared. If anybody would like to, that would be amazing.
So how can people like get in touch with us or find out more information about McIntosh at the Willow and what kind of things we do here?
So the easiest way to find all of our information is at www.mcintoshatthewillow.com, and on there you will find a page for the podcast. You can either search for it or it might be in the top bar, the top menu. And if you wanted to get in contact with us about sending something in, you can leave a comment on our social pages, or you could send us an email directly to bookings@mcintoshatthewillow.com, which is our general email mailbox. But I'll also make sure that there is hopefully a little comment section on the podcast page.
Yeah.
So you can put some things in there and, you know, hopefully have a chat and see what you guys think. And if you've got anything to add or any commentary on what we've said or differing opinions, because obviously a lot of history, but I mean, obviously what Jodie says is this historic and social facts there.
Solid facts from Jodie.
But mine are sometimes obviously very opinion based because they're sort of history of art.
Yeah, great. So the last thing that I thought we would do in our podcast, just to change the tone a wee bit, is to end the episode by stepping back in time to 1903, when the tea rooms opened. And so I've asked Isabella, and I will ask any guests that we have on, to pre-prepare a fact about 1903, something that happened in 1903, or, you know, anything that's 1903 relevant. We're not very strict on our criteria. And maybe share it, and that way we can learn a little bit more about what life was like for Charles William McIntosh, what was happening around him when he was building this beautiful building. So, would you like to go first, or shall I go first?
You go first.
Shall go first then. So, my 1903 fact, I've actually written it down here, is that in 1903 was the year that Crayola crayons were invented.
What?
Now, do you remember Crayola crayons from when you were a kid?
Yes.
Yeah, right?
I used to eat them sometimes.
Well, that's okay, because they were edible.
Yeah.
So the wonderful thing about Crayola crayons, were they like one of the first child-safe crayons. Before that, you know, if you ate a crayon, you probably died straight away. So I think children's life expectancy went through the roof once Crayola invented crayons. So they were invented in 1903. And I've got a little quiz for you,
okay,
which is, Can you name the 8 original Crayola colours?
No!
So, I will give you 2 lives. So, what do you think? See the box. See the box, Isabella. We've all seen that Crayola colour box. Colouring box, right?
Can I ask one question?
Yes, you can.
Are these names tailored for children?
They're very child-friendly names, yes.
Different vibes.
I'm looking for 8 crayons. Tell me what you think.
Indigo?
No. That's a strong start. Yep. No.
Green.
Yes.
Yellow?
Yes. I feel like you found the sweet spot. Right. Keep
red?
Going. Yes.
Purple?
No.
Why is there no purple?
You have to take it up with Mr. Crayola. Although that's not his name, actually.
What's his name?
I'm not sure what his name was, but...
I should find out his name for this kind of thing. This is
Crayola, I think Crayola is like French... It's got a bit of a French word for chalk, really. And then the back end of the word, the ola bit, means like wax or paraffin wax.
Why does that make it sound less
oily? Oily. It well, you asked me.
Oily.
I mean, you asked me.
Oily adrenous.
Yeah, so Crayola, I think, basically means chalky, oily. But I feel like we've peeked behind the curtain and I've ruined the grounds. But anyway, someone, you've only got 3 colours, so come on. What else is in the box?
What, green, yellow, blue, red. How many are there?
8.
What? Come on. And there's no purple.
No.
Black?
Yes.
Grey?
Okay, so you've got 1, 2, you've got 3 to get.
Brown?
Yes.
Orange?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's one last one.
Okay, I don't know what it is. Did I say grey? I said grey.
Black? You said black already, so I'm actually going to stop you at 7, which is not a bad score.
What colour?
Although I feel like perhaps a child would have done better. It's one of those tests where kids would have done better than grown-ups. And we'll maybe, if any listeners can figure out what the 8th colour is that Isabella has missed, then you can just pop it in the comments column. See how we do. So that's my 1903 fact. Crayola crayons entered into the world. Isabella, tell us something about 1903.
I mean, I've got just a really straightforward one.
Tell us.
The straightforward one is, the first edition of the Tour de France was in 1903.
Wow. So the Tour de France, I'm probably never going to do the Tour de France, don't know about you.
Why not? I'm never going to do it.
I tell you why not. It's not the reason you think.
What's the reason that I think?
I think you think the reason is that I'm not a professional cyclist, and that's why.
That could
but
work.
That's not my reason.
Okay, I didn't even think about that.
My reason is I'm not really into all that tight lycra wearing.
I think the lycra is probably one of the most positive parts of it.
Well, just, I mean, we've obviously, again, got different... We
you
see the world
see
in different
ways. Yourself in a new light.
I don't want to see myself in that light.
I do.
Great, alright, so we have, look at that, we've run out of time. We've reached the end of our allotted time on our podcast. So I would like to say thank you very much for those of you who've made it to the end and listened to our first podcast. Like I say, do get in touch if you have anything you'd like us to cover or you've got any thoughts about the tea rooms or memories of the tea rooms. Isabella, is there anything else that you would like to say?
Just thank you for listening and we will see you next time.
And next time we will have a different thing to talk about, but we will also be trying a different one of the 27 types of tea here.
Jodie looks really intense when she talks about tea. There's eyebrow wriggling.
Because some of the teas are
wiggling, not wriggling.
Some of the teas are quite out there, you know. I think we've eased ourselves in with the 1903 blend. But
next time should be a surprise to you, and I'll do the next one so it's a surprise for you. And
yeah.
You can guess what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And all our teas are available in like the shop as well. So
and
can,
the retail online.
That's right, so you can buy them as like Christmas presents and things because they're fancy. They're nice tea. It's from Pico Tea in Edinburgh, so it's all lovely, like localish teas.
The good stuff.
The good stuff, exactly. All right, that's it from us. Thank you so much, and we will see you, but not really see you because it's a podcast, next time.